This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires.
Swing and a miss. Frankly, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Hour number two officially kicking off. Bobby Krivitsky and Shuki Wrights coming to you live from the Pepe compound. Shu, let's get to what's going down, the latest developments from the ice. A whole bunch of reporters from Kevin Weeks to Frank Cervelli. It seems like some people are crediting that Matt Murley, a former professional player, had this first, but nonetheless, it is apparent that the Boston Bruins' next head coach will be Jim Montgomery, now formerly of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Shu, your thoughts.
I love the hire. I am a massive fan of the hire because this is a player's coach. I saw it when he was with the Dallas Stars, and he had them going in the right direction. You know, like this was a team that was, you know, steamrolling and becoming a Stanley Cup contending team in the Western Conference before he was let go due to personal misconduct. Unfortunately, he has since rebounded nicely and has earned himself another head coaching opportunity in the NHL. I'm thrilled for the hire. I love it. I have very little fault with this hire.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. And according to Kevin Weeks, it's going to be in the neighborhood of a $2 million to three-year deal. And so this is someone who, look, Joe McDonald, another one who's reported this, who covers the Bruins, he said that he received a text from a former member of the Black and Gold who's still playing in the NHL that told him, quote, Jim Montgomery is a great coach and even better person. The guys will love playing for him. So I do agree that this is someone who it sounds like can keep the boys motivated, who is going to have the respect of the locker room, and certainly knows how to win. He did it at Denver at the collegiate level. He's been an integral part of teams as an assistant coach. Mm-hmm. He has plenty of experience. So it does seem like this was a pretty good hire.
This was a great hire because this is an aging Bruins team, no question. And you need someone that's going to be able to not only work well with the younger players like Pastrnak, McAvoy, but also the core veterans like Bergeron and Marchand when he comes back from the surgery. So this is a great hire and a great way to start the offseason for the Boston Bruins.
Yes or no? Better than Bruce Cassidy?
No, not yet. I mean, he's got to prove himself first.
Time will tell. Stick with us here on the Diehards. We got major college news coming up next.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky alongside Shukri writes, Shu, the college landscape as we know it is once again changing. USC and UCLA, two flagship programs from the Pac-12, they're going to the Big Ten in 2024. Right off the bat, I got to tell you, I hate this. I get that money rules all, but these two programs, they are Pac-12 blue bloods. You look at the geography alone. I don't like the idea of USC and UCLA being in the same conference as Ohio State and Michigan. They belong out where they are right now.
So my only question becomes, would they still be called the Big 12 even once they join? Because at this point, it'd be more than 12 teams.
So Big 10, but Big 12 is taken.
Like, I mean, but I just feel that for those two programs to leave the conference, leave the Pac-12, I'm grossed out, I'm disappointed, I'm angry. Even as a longtime USC fan, why? Because is it money? Is it over?
Of course.
Like, because how in the world would this work? And I'm sure that the schedules, this is probably the easiest job in the world for them to figure this out. But how would this work in terms of scheduling? So if you got to go play Michigan or Ohio State on the road, are you going to play it on a neutral site? Or are you going to play it out east?
Because no, it's a whole conference thing. So the travel's going to suck, but they're going to have to go out there and play in Ann Arbor and Columbus, and then those schools are going to have to come out to the West Coast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
This,
I hate
to me,
it.
Is going too far.
I hate it because this is like, I think about a year and a half or two ago, when two conferences in college football expanded, like, which I didn't mind entirely, but this is entirely different. Like, so you take those two schools out that are in Los Angeles, second largest market in the country. What happens then? Because this is going to have a trickle-down effect. Make no mistake about it.
Oh, this is a devastating blow to the Pac-12. And, Shu, what I wonder, and I saw, I believe, I'm pretty sure it was Heather Dinich who posted this, but, you know, it was one of those things that I think a lot of people started to question as this news came out. What happens to the Rose Bowl now? That is a historic game between the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. And if you're going to poach the two most lucrative programs from the Pac-12, they might say, we don't want you here.
Exactly. And I'm telling you, it is going to be awkward come like New Year's Eve. And you got the Rose Bowl. And guess who's playing? USC. Oof. And freaking Ohio State.
And you don't have, well, they can't now. Like, you can't have that
like
now.
Like, you can't. There you have it.
A great matchup ruined.
It's a great matchup, which would have drawn millions to the TV on New Year's Eve. Gone. But I'm thinking from a perspective of USC. I get that given the big offseason that they've had. They hired, if I remember correctly, Lane Kiffin.
They hired Lincoln Riley.
Lincoln Riley as the new head coach at USC. Tremendous hire, by the way. How will this impact recruiting? And I'm sure that it is going to impact recruiting in terms of being able to get some of the best recruits in the country, especially like regionally or geographically.
Might even help them in the Midwest,
right? And like, because now you're thinking, well, they're now part of the Big Ten and whatnot. So would it be the worst idea to go to USC, a team that plays in Los Angeles in the bright lights of LA, where USC still has a pretty good stronghold on Los Angeles, in the greater Los Angeles area.
And what those boosters can offer, NIL deals. USC has as big of an advantage in the current landscape as any university in college athletics. So that, you know, I think this just adds to how enticing their recruiting pitch is going to be to most recruits.
Yeah.
And so, look, it's technically another win for USC. I think it's a loss for the consumer. And it further, you know, last year we had Texas and Oklahoma to announce that they're going to take their talents to the SEC.
Yeah.
I think we're just further pushing towards what almost feels inevitable at times, and that is that we're going to do away with conferences to a pretty significant extent, and it's just everyone schedule it yourselves, and whether you're trying to game the system in the sense that you take it easier on yourself, or you feel like to get into the playoffs and maybe it expands at some point, that we're trying to stack the schedule, that's up to you.
And that's going to be something that I do think that it is going to be just fascinating to see how this all plays out between this season and going into 2023. And I'm of the belief that at the end of the day, you got to stick with what's been working in terms of a marketing standpoint, in terms of what has generated money for the longest of time. I mean, I know change can be tough, but this is not one of those changes that you look at as, oh my God, this is difficult. This is the end of the world. I can't do this. But I look at this and I think if you are USC or even UCLA and you're saying to yourself, man, this has got to be a big opportunity, but I think it's also going to be the death of the conference that is on the Pac-12, because now you take those two programs out. The only superpower, so to speak, that's in that conference, in my opinion, Oregon. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, who is there to watch now? Oregon, very up and down, especially
exactly.
Post Chip Kelly. You know,
it's pretty Jekyll and Hyde, if you ask me.
Yeah, it fluctuates rapidly. A lot of down years.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, Oregon State doesn't move the needle. Arizona, so-so. Arizona State, so-so. There isn't some landmark program. You know, Stanford, they have a great reputation that they've earned. But, you know, like, again, the ceiling just, it typically is of a kind of mid-tier football program.
Yeah.
So it's a massive blow, especially in terms of basketball. You look at the success that UCLA has had in recent years, including a Final Four run, almost got to the national championship. I mean, it's just, it's a huge blow to the Pac-12, much like the Big 12 getting spurned by the Sooners and the Longhorns.
And that was tough because you talk about Texas, like the Longhorns, and
watching that bank account go out the door.
It's like, whoo-hoo. But the Sooners, like, they are the college football team that was and kind of still is the heartbeat of the heartland, if you will. Like, there weren't many college programs that in the Midwest you look at and you say, that program is one of the true heartbeats between Missouri, Oklahoma, the Sooners, and dare I even say, Texas Tech. Like Texas Tech, I would even throw in that
A&M?
Conversation. A&M as well, yeah.
But that's SEC, though. It's not Big 12. So, again, the Big 12, we haven't really seen the fallout yet, obviously, but that's a conference that knows it's in trouble. The Pac-12 knows now it needs to start doing some poaching of its own. Yeah. I don't know who it's going to get, but, you know, we'll see. I remember some talk about West Virginia being in play. I can't think off the top of my head about is there a resolution there or not, because we're talking about last year and rumors and everything. So do they have a commitment already? Is it too late to poach them? We shall see.
Oh, yeah.
But the bottom line is the Pac-12 can't just move forward with these subtractions without any additions.
There's got to be some sort of additions. It's got to come from somewhere. And you wonder, where is it going to come from? And, like, who are those teams? Like, maybe – I don't know if the Mountain West still, like, exists. Maybe it's, like teams from there or – but, man, I think the only conference that is still rather untouched, so to speak, is the SEC.
Yeah.
Like, they are – how do I put it?
They're adding. They don't have to worry about losing
like
anyone.
They're not losing anyone. They are the conference that is
– You want to say they're like the Yankees.
Has become – They want to be. They are college football's version of the Yankees, but to simplify it, I think they are the cash cow of college football.
Yeah,
that is the conference
which makes you the cash cow of college athletics.
Exactly, like because I mean Alabama, LSU, Georgia. No disrespect to Florida, I'd even throw in the Florida Gators in there. Those four programs alone, they're bringing you millions every week in terms of cash revenue, whether if it's through TV or through like merchandise, and now with the NIL like the likeness like program that's now part of college football where players are going to be paid, the SEC is going to be untouched. I think it's untouched, and it's going to be rather interesting to see how does the Pac-12 recover from losing two of the golden programs in the conference.
And it does make it interesting because the SEC, which is only going stronger, watching competitors in the Power Five get weaker, maybe they don't want to and fight to avoid a scenario where conferences don't really matter because
yeah.
they have so much power that maybe they are able to swing the bat to the point where it doesn't happen.
Yeah. And it's going to be fascinating. I'm telling you, like, Saturdays beginning next year is going to be so much fun to watch these teams.
So this is like, 2024, like, just for those
so that,
listening.
That's basically 2 years from now.
Yep.
So 2 years from now, it's going to be so much fun to, like, see how it all, like.
With Lincoln like, Riley and that program
yeah.
in full swing. We'll see if Chip Kelly is still at UCLA.
And he, Lincoln Riley, like, having 2 years under his belt in terms of recruiting. Like not knowing how to like attract some of the big recruits to the USC. It's going to be interesting for sure.
It's going to be very interesting to see how it all develops. Stick with us here on the Diehards because Shu and I are going to get into the action on the diamond. That's coming up next. You're listening to Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and basketball insiders Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky and Shu Kree writes. Shu, it's time to talk about the action on the diamond. And we're going to take a big picture perspective to this juncture in the season. We're going to give you our MLB power rankings. I got a feeling who you got at the top of your list, but why don't you kick us off?
Right now, Yankees, number one. Number two.
Well, let's go one at a time.
Sure.
But I will say this. There's no way someone could give an honest power rankings and not have the pinstripes at the top. They've been the best team in baseball. The record shows it. They're 56-21. I know the Astros are getting close, Brian, but they're at 48 wins. No one else has 50 at the moment. They're getting close to 60. You know, I know that they lost tonight, Brian, but the 6-4 in their last 10 games still, they've been red hot overall. They're 34-9 at home, which is disgustingly good. 727 win percentage on the season. Nearly 400 runs scored total to this point in the campaign. I mean, they've got a plus 150 run differential. We've talked about it. Best bullpen in baseball.
Yep.
The rotation has had a resurgence. I mean, they're just on fire.
Exactly. And you talk about the bullpen being one of the major reasons why the Yankees are where they are. I mean, not just the bullpen, but also the rotation. But even the rotation recently has shown some sign of leakage. You know, like Nestor Cortes has not looked like the Nestor Cortes from the beginning of the season. And like Jameson Taillon has struggled in the last couple of starts, especially in the first inning where early on, like in the season, like he was really dominant in the first inning, but in the last couple of starts, he's given up like six runs, if not a little more than that, in the first inning. So you wonder about like Cortes, the innings limit, and as well as Taillon. But there's no mistaking the fact that the Yankees, even despite with those two guys on with the concerns that they have, that they have been overall the best team in baseball,
without a doubt. So I'll give you my number two now, and you know, last year, you know what I was guilty of on these airwaves, and I owned it, is that constantly I would come on one week and say, hottest team in baseball. And then the next week I'd watch another team sustain that streak a little longer. I'd say, this is the new hottest team in baseball. You know, the Mariners held the title for a little bit, the Giants, the Dodgers, all over the road.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so what a difference a week makes, at least for me, that last week I thought the Dodgers were playing like the second best team in baseball behind the Yankees. Right now, though, the Astros are 8-2 in their last 10 games. They've got a better record overall than L.A. I think with what they are putting together, and they've been up there all season. You know, I had them third last week when I looked at it. But I think that they have, at this point in time, surpassed L.A.
You know, I don't mind it because even though when you look at the Astros and what they've been able to do, you can't help but to be impressed with what they've been doing offensively. You know, like Yordan Alvarez has really developed into a pure power hitter from the left side. And I hope that he does make a full recovery after that scary collision the other day against the New York Mets. And as well as talk about their seamless transition from Carlos Correa
Jeremy Pena.
Jeremy Pena. Oh, thank you. In which that you can't help but really be in awe of the job that Dusty Baker has done as manager. And then you got the ages wonder, Justin Verlander, at the top of your rotation. I mean, the Astros, they're still a good team. And the only difference between the Yankees and the Astros is the fact that the Yankees have been on a historic run so far. But man, the Astros, they're still a threat. I even as a Yankee fan, you still got to take them seriously, especially like come October, because not only because of the experience, they just got to the World Series last year, falling short to the Atlanta Braves, but their offense, they are probably the best offensive team in baseball, not named the New York Yankees. And the fact that I really do like their rotation, it's been sneaky good, and I do mean sneaky good. When you think about like the guys behind like Verlander, and you think of Valdez, you think of like some of the other arms that they have as well, and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, without a doubt. There, we were talking with noted Astros fan and our producer Brian McDonald that they could use some arms to help, or at least one arm to help out at the back end of the bullpen, mm-hmm. but overall, it's a pretty good operation there in Houston, as the results show, 48-27. Shu, who do you have taking home the bronze medal as third on your list in the power rankings?
And who in baseball? I'm going to go Padres.
I love it.
I would go Padres just for the fact that despite not having the shortstop Fernando Tatis Jr. the entire season so far, it's been incredible to see what Bob Melvin has been able to do as manager of the Padres. And you know, they're just getting back Joe Musgrove. But man, I'm telling you, there's a lot to really like from what I've seen from what the Padres have been able to do so far.
Top five in the MLB without Tatis Jr. That's insanely
really
good.
Is.
This is a team that after last season's collapse, they came in hungry and focused, and that injury and not having him to start could have really set them back. But they have handled it in stride and are performing really well. And so shout out to, like you said, Bob Melvin, and the Padres in general look really strong. They've also got a former member of your New York Yankees in Luke Voit out there at the hot corner, or at first base, rather, the cold corner. But nonetheless, Padres, top five record in baseball. So certainly I like that pick, putting them third on your power rankings. For me, though, ultimately, I surveyed the landscape, and I decided that, obviously, if it was close between the Astros and Dodgers, third I have L.A. We kind of discussed them. But let's use this as a chance, Shu, to discuss the whole Freddie Freeman saga, because I'm curious to get your take. When I look at that, here's what I say. Mm-hmm. We all know you wanted to stay with the Braves.
Yeah.
Not a surprise. And we all know that coming back to Atlanta to get your ring, that's an emotional deal. Get it. But you do need to prove to the team you signed a six-year contract with, whether you wanted to or not, you did it. You got to prove to your new teammates that you're loyal and committed to them.
That was never a question because of his character. But what angered me about the situation between Casey Close and Freddie Freeman is the fact that, as we all learn now, that Freddie Freeman's first choice was to take the lesser deal just to stay with Atlanta. And I wholeheartedly believe that he would have. But now I look at Casey Close and I'm like, dude, you're kind of a sleazy SOB. Like, what are we doing here? Like, and you're the same agent that also represents Aaron Judge.
Oof.
So as a Yankee fan, I'm looking at you like,
negotiations
I don't trust you. Right. I'm like, I don't trust you now because this is what you did to Freddie Freeman. Who's to say that you wouldn't do the same thing to Aaron Judge come the offseason when it's time to sit at the table, and who knows what happens come free agency time?
I got to tell you, try to think back to the beginning of the year. A lot of people, myself included, thought it was a fair offer that the Yankees made Judge and were surprised he didn't take it.
I was surprised, but even then, I like the fact that he's been betting on himself. But you know what, so far, including tonight, he's playing beyond that contract.
Yeah, he's been a monster.
If he took that contract, that would probably have been the biggest bargain in the history of baseball, given what he's been doing so far this year. Let's say that if he continues this into the second half of the season, there's no question in my mind he's going to win the MVP. He's not concerned about. I mean, it's an incentive, but
pretty good way to go into negotiations,
right? But even then, he's been consistent about this. Our goal is to win the World Series. And this has been a team so far with this historic run so far through 76, now 77 games, their best record all time behind the 1928 and the 1998 Yankees. So this is a team where we're now officially at that point, at the halfway mark, officially come next week, where you could say, dude, it's World Series or bust. There's nothing else to be said, and it's the truth.
If you're the Yankees, that should always be the standard.
That always is, but that hasn't been the case
right
the last three, four years, unfortunately.
Well, I think it has been, at least for most of them. There's been some rebuilding
17
years, like when they sold off Carlos Beltran and some pieces, but you know, last year was championship or bust. It just didn't work out that way.
Right, because they weren't the team that was built to win it all, and they got exposed in a wild card game against the Red Sox.
We are going to dive into matters on the gridiron and picking up with our division preview series, talking AFC East football on the other side of this break. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and basketball insiders Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Shukri Wrights and Bobby Gravitsky coming to you live from the Pepe Compound in Boston, Massachusetts. Shu, I'm excited because we've really, and credit to you, you were the one who came up with this, struck gold, in my opinion, with this NFL comprehensive division-by-division outlook as we slowly but surely get ready for the upcoming campaign. So now it is time for us to get to matters in the AFC East. There's no way you're thinking there's a team besides the Buffalo Bills who are going to take the crown.
No, it's still the Buffalo Bills until they prove to me otherwise. Even with the moves that they made in the offseason, I look at that team and I say, they may be the team to be in the AFC this year. Hot take of the summer. Like, yes, I do think they are more than good enough to beat the Kansas City Chiefs this year. Finally, after coming oh so close in overtime this past January and last year's playoffs. So I do think that Buffalo is a team to not only be in the division, but potentially in the entire conference.
Shoot, they might be the best team in the NFL. This might be their Super Bowl.
I wouldn't put it past them, honestly.
Rams, a little bit older, not to mention they lose Von Miller to Buffalo. And I know he wasn't a massive piece for L.A., but he's still Von Miller. You've got to respect his game. And I think him going to Buffalo, not that we all didn't already know, Josh Allen, stud, but it does, when you see other great players with those kind of credentials taking their talents to Western New York, it does speak volumes.
It does, and it goes to show you that this is a team that clearly has the next great quarterback in Josh Allen. And not only that, they're also going to have a new stadium in the next 3-4 years. I'm willing to bank on it. And I do think that this is a team right now in Buffalo that is built to win, not just this year, but the next several years. I do think that guys are seeing what's happening in Buffalo in terms of Sean McDermott, Josh Allen, and recognize that they are building something very special up there. And, you know, the years of Buffalo being the doormat for the Patriots in the AFC East, that ended in 2019. Now, the Patriots, they are your, like, they are your rival now. Like, forget about the Jets, but the Buffalo, they are your competition. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how Buffalo and New England duke it out this season.
Yeah, we won't go too much longer on the Bills. Just about done with them here. Pretty obvious they're the best team in the division.
Right.
But I do look at it and say, Von Miller, even at this stage of his career, and he was pretty good last season, that's like the only missing piece that they really had left was they needed more speed. They needed guys that can get home to the quarterback, at least generate more pressure if you're not going to get a sack. And so they need to develop some of these guys like A.J. Epenesa, for instance. But, you know, Von Miller, that might be the one piece that they needed left. They've kept guys like Matt Milano in free agency on that defense. So really big time there. And then in terms of coaching developments, they lose Daboll to the Giants. It looked like he was going to take Ken Dorsey with him, the quarterback's coach, but they're able to retain Dorsey, give him a promotion, and bring in a guy that I'm a big believer in, Joe Brady, to help that offensive coaching staff. So they look to me like they're probably going to be just as strong there.
Oh, they are. And although I do think that to some lesser degree they will miss Brian Daboll,
who's now
the head coach of the New York Giants. But I do think that because of the pieces that they've been able to retain, like as you mentioned, Joe Brady, I think that this is a team. If you look at this roster on both sides of the ball, top to bottom, like they're stacked.
Yeah.
They're stacked talent wise, and I do think it is going to be awesome to expect another big year between Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs, who I definitely think they are going to be, if not better than Mahomes and Mecole Hardman in terms of the best quarterback receiver duo in the league.
Here's where it gets interesting. Behind the Bills, who do you have as the second best team in the AFC East?
It's got to be the Patriots. I mean, right now. And throughout the homer call or whatever, being a Patriots fan.
Hit him up at Shukri Wrights.
But, like, I do think that the Patriots, they are number two in the division right now. But if we're going to be completely honest with ourselves, like, they I mean, you're not going to sit here and convince me that Miami is better than New England. You're not going to convince me that the Jets are better than New England right now. I mean, we've heard of all this promise talk of Zach Wilson and like Miami. Oh, but they did get Tyreek Hill as their big splash of the offseason. Great. But I still look at that team that I think they are going to give the Patriots some fits at the towards the end of the season, as they always do. But I do think that New England is number two in a division, and in a division in which that I think is going to be competitive going into 2022.
It's going to be real competitive. I think that, you know, I don't want to get to the other teams just yet because we're going to talk about them.
Sure.
But
yeah.
So we'll go number two. I'm with you, and I'll take the homer hit if people want to throw it my way. But Mac Jones and Bill Belichick, Mac in year two, even with the coaching shenanigans going on there, I still think he's the best quarterback of the three that, you know, we're talking about after Josh Allen in that division. Belichick, you know, he certainly got his moments where you get concerned, but
sure, yeah,
he is still the best coach in the NFL. He doesn't always perform up to that standard, but he still is the top dog in the league. And so between the brain power, the ability of a burgeoning Mac Jones, I really like the fact that they not only have continuity at wide receiver with guys like Kendrick Bourne, who was a monster for them last year.
Yeah.
Jacoby Myers gets better every season. They add Devontae Parker, who I'm not saying sets the world on fire, but just filling in that piece to the puzzle with another solid player as your ex receiver. Go up and get it, box guys out, all of that. So, you know, the run game is filthy. One of the best offensive lines in football.
Speaking of the running game, they're going to have a healthy James White come back this year. And that is massive because I strongly felt like there are times that they really miss James White as an option to catch out of the backfield, option where you could literally put him like put him in trips with the receivers and be able to make catches in the passing game. They really missed him at times last season. They're going to have him back again healthy this year. He could be a difference maker.
That's going to be huge. I think Ramondre Stevenson
showed
progression as a receiver. He's not James White, but he's getting better.
Yeah.
So year two, let's see what it brings for him in that regard. The defense, you know, there's still some concerns there, but you know, let's see what Josh Uche does in development. Let's see how they seem like they're transitioning towards younger, more athletic linebackers.
I definitely do think so, yeah.
Right? Raekwon the Chef McMillan. And then they've got Mac Wilson, among others. Mm-hmm. Cam McGrone is a player that a lot of people tell you, watch out for this guy. He didn't play due to injury as a rookie, but he was a stud at Michigan. So there are some pieces there to make you believe that Belichick can coach him up. And I think that there's more reason for me to buy into the Patriots. But then number three is obviously not the Jets. It's the Dolphins.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Mike McDaniel, I'm treading lightly, but I'm excited to see what he brings to the table because he's got a different flavor, a different style to him than we're used to seeing from NFL head coaches.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a believer in Tua, but if it's going to work, I mean, my goodness, you've got Tyreek Hill on one side, Jalen Waddle on the other, Mike Gesicki at tight end. Like, if it's not now, then gone at the end of the season.
And I agree. And this is literally break it or make it gear for Tua Tagovailoa. There's no question because you don't have the excuse. You have the weapons. You have the coaching. And I expect their offensive line to be be better than what they were last year. So for me, I look at Tua Tagovailoa like you got to make it happen. Like you got your number one receiver now. Joey Waddle is an excellent number two option as well. And like they have an average yet okay run game as well. So I look at this team and this offense for Miami, and I'm like, man, you don't really have much of an excuse. The defense is going to have to, like, hold its part, but you need your quarterback to play like the high-caliber quarterback that he can be, that he showed you that he was when he was in Alabama. But now he's at the stage of his career where it's really more of, like put-up-or-shut-up time.
Yeah, he's got to come through. And then defensively, to have Byron Jones on one side, Xavier Howard on the other, you know, it's not the best second safety group. Excuse me, I'll get it out eventually. But Brandon Jones and Javon Holland. But, you know, they add Emmanuel Ogbah. Mm-hmm. They've got Jerome Baker, who I like at linebacker. Christian Wilkins, who's from Massachusetts, is a stud on that defensive line. He anchors that unit. So I do like some of the pieces defensively, what they get out of that group, anyone's guess, but at least in the secondary, they can bank on a scheme revolving around those two corners in Howard and Jones.
And that's why I think that if you're Miami, you're looking at arguably one of the better secondaries in the division. I think it's up there with Buffalo's.
No doubt.
Because we saw Xavier Howard literally make some really big plays against the Patriots last year. And I thought that, I was like, wow, if they ever figured out in Miami with him being in the heart and soul of that secondary, watch out. And I think that it's going to be fascinating to see how it all comes together, for this Miami secondary, as they are going to be tested in this division with Josh Allen and as well as Mac Jones, who I think is going to have an even better year, second year, than he did in his rookie season.
Yeah, and I think that's where I like the idea of the Patriots trying to spread defenses thin and test their depth, because Howard and Jones, anyone's beatable, but those are two really good players. Let's see what your number three corner can do against Jacoby Myers, for instance, or however you manipulate the matchups, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see in that regard. And then bottom of the barrel, but I got to be honest, I'm excited for what the Jets seem to be building. This was a pivotal draft for Joe Douglas in that front office.
Yeah.
They get Sauce Gardner, who, in my opinion, was the number one corner in this draft. If you had Daryl Stingley, that's totally fine and plenty defensible. Garrett Wilson, an absolute burner from Ohio State, who runs really good routes. I know he's on the smaller side, but we've seen Devontae Smith get it done in Philly. And then Jermaine Johnson, some people had as a top 10 pick. They go back into the end of the first round and get him at 26. I love the draft that they had.
I think they did a great job in the draft in terms of finding the right pieces that's going to be a good fit for the Jets defensively, and as well as to continue to build around Zach Wilson, who he's got a big arm. I'm not worried about his arm strength and whatnot or his accuracy, but it's very difficult to win in the NFL when your offensive line is porous, you don't have a good run game, and you're expecting a lot out of a rookie. It's just a recipe for disaster. But I do think that this is a very young Jets team that they seem to have a lot going for them, but they are going to have to go through those growing pains. They're not ready to win yet. You talk about the process that have been drafted in this year's draft alone. I don't expect any of those guys to come in and immediately be the difference maker for a team that was among the worst in the NFL last season to becoming a playoff team in one short off season. It's not going to happen just yet.
Yeah, that's unfair expectations if anyone in Jets Nation is putting that on them, and I'm not saying they are, but you got to be realistic about how they perform out of the gates here. And I think that even Mo Salah has acknowledged that the biggest question, we're only going as far as Zach Wilson takes us. We can put the pieces that we feel good about around him, but nonetheless, live wire arm, athletic kid, but at that size, he's 6'2", 215.
Yeah.
That generally doesn't work even in today's NFL. I mean, just look at, obviously, Kyler Murray is smaller, but Kyler Murray is also a more skilled quarterback.
Exactly.
And consistently fades down the stretch, doesn't play well in the postseason. So, Zach Wilson, how far can they go with him, period? That I'm dubious.
I'm thinking they could go places, but I'm not willing to say they can go far, because it's only 1 year under his belt. And you got a second-year head coach in Robert Saleh, who I do think is going to make some improvements in year two. But this is a true rebuild to the truest form in the NFL. And this is not a playoff-bound Jets team at all.
No chance.
Which is why I say, okay, I want to see how they continue to develop in year two, especially with Zach Wilson under center. Like you mentioned his attributes, he's 6'2". He's not the big sturdy quarterback in comparison to a Josh Allen or even a Justin Fields, just looking across the NFL for the fact of the matter. But I do think that it is going to be incumbent for the New York Jets to practice patience. This team is going to make a lot of mistakes. There's no question, but I do think they are heading in the right direction.
They absolutely are. That covers our top-to-bottom comprehensive preview of the AFC East. Stick with us here on the Diehards. We have a major NBA signing to dive into as we put a bow on tonight's program. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and basketball insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
Shoe, the New York Knicks moved heaven and earth to get their guy, and indeed it's happened. They gave up draft capital. They moved off contracts from Kemba Walker to Nerlens Noel and Alec Burks. And finally now, at the price tag of a mere $104 million over 4 years, Jalen Brunson has agreed to become a New York Knick.
I like the deal. It doesn't break the bank for the New York Knicks. I do think that it gives them cap flexibility to be able to go out and make moves during this offseason for a Knicks team who I do expect they can get back to the playoffs like in 2022, 2023. But it all will depend on the moves that they make during the offseason, a decision to make in terms of how are they going to build around Brunson and as well as Julius Randle, who I think is still the focal point of this Knicks offense.
With a package centered around R.J. Barrett, do you think the Knicks can get themselves into the Kevin Durant sweepstakes?
No, I don't think they're going to want to move off from R.J. Barrett. I think he's a very important part of what they hope to become in the future, along with Obi Toppin as well. So the Knicks ought to be careful there, but they know they have to improve in a lot of areas.
It's a patient approach. We call that maturity. You love to see it out of the New York Knicks. For Brian McDonald and Shukri Wright, I'm Bobby Kravitsky. Thank you so much for listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Enjoy the rest of the night. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll be back with the Diehards 8 to 10 Eastern tomorrow night on the Sports Map Radio Network.